Hi, this is spoken word artist Tribal Rain.
And this is Max Parthas, host of New Abolitionist Radio, modern day slavery abolitionists. And you are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio.
Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio on 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. It's Monday morning. My name is Jeff Humfeld. Today, host Craig LeBeau talks with Mayor Mark Holland of the Unified Government of Wyandotte County about the county jail, the new juvenile justice facility, police misconduct, and more. Then, there has been a great deal of activity in Kansas City and across the nation to denounce the emergence from the shadows of racist and repressive forces in our society. In the second part of our broadcast, we will be airing audio from two of the rallies held recently in Kansas City around issues of police killings and prisoners' human rights. Moore Squared held the first rally to call for accountability in police killings of citizens on Sunday, August 13th. Then, on Saturday, August 19th, almost a dozen groups came together in KC to rally and march in support of the Millions for Prisoners Human Rights March on Washington, D.C. There will be no calendar of events or 420 drug war news this week. We give our thanks to Mike Murphy for engineering today's broadcast. Now to Craig LeBeau and his guest, Mayor Mark Holland.
With me today, we have Mayor Mark Holland of the Wyandotte County Unified Government, Kansas City, Kansas. And he has been in that position since 2013. And before that, he served for 6 years on the County Commission as County Commissioner. Welcome, Mayor.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So today, we want to talk about the recent study that was done on the Wyandotte County Jail, as well as the police and fire department, mm-hmm. and what that study involved and what are some of the reforms they're looking at.
Well, just to give you a little bit of background, in 2013, when I first came in as mayor, I committed to doing a study of all three public safety departments. We spend 60% of our money, over $100 million a year, on public safety, and it's our top priority and always will be. One of the things I wanted to make sure we were doing is there was no one could remember in memory the last 20 or so years that we've done a comprehensive study of all three departments to really look for efficiencies, to look to make sure we're doing best practices and we're being as effective as possible. So we launched the fire study first, and that has been completed, and we have a ton of recommendations out of that. We did a police study looking at the police operations, and we've done a jail study looking at our jail population and how to manage that. So those are all three in, and now we're in the implementation phase. I mean, we're further along in the fire department in terms of implementation. We just received the police one, and the jail study is underway as well. So really, I feel very good about the fact that we've been able to get these studies done from first-class groups. I mean, it's a different group that studies each one because you have different groups with expertise. But we've had a great response so far. In terms of how they've gone.
I think there was a preliminary draft, at least, of the jail study.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the things they're recommending?
Well, the jail study came back and said, you know, our jail generally, from a bones perspective, is in good shape. It's going to need some investment. We need about $7 million worth of roof and elevator and, you know, kind of normal upkeep and repair. The biggest thing that came out of that, though, with the jail study was we have our juvenile facility within our larger jail. Which is, one, it's not a best practice. The jail was not built specifically for juveniles. And so there's been some makeshift since it opened to kind of make it work, because as you bring people in, the adult population and the youth population have to be completely separated. And we're putting kids in what is really a prison. And we do have a school in there, and we have a tremendous staff. Our youth detention staff are second to none, absolutely committed to these kids and working hard for them. But we don't have a facility for them to really do the kind of wraparound services that kids need these days. You know, there's only a handful of kids that need to be in prison who have committed such heinous, violent crimes that they need to be in prison. Most of our kids have been knuckleheads, and they need to get an opportunity to turn it around. And so we're the big recommendation that came out was to build a new juvenile facility. And we're actually going to the commission has approved a $19 million juvenile facility that's going to have all the wraparound services. You know, it's going to have the courtroom right on site. It's going to have the family services. It's going to have the probational issues, the intake. It'll all be on one site, and it will have secure holding. It'll also have a respite holding, which is not really a punishment, but an opportunity for families that are struggling before reintegration can happen, if they just need a night between places to get somewhere. So we're really looking at building a state-of-the-art juvenile facility to give our kids the best chance. Boy, if we don't interrupt the cycle of crime early, we're just going to create career criminals. And I don't want to send people to jail to teach them how to be better criminals. I want to send people to a facility that's going to get them back on track, back with their family, back on track for school, get them caught up, and help them work through their issues. The reality is, in America, we have criminalized really three things. We've criminalized mental health issues, we've criminalized addiction, and we've criminalized poverty. And those are issues that we need to address early with folks who come into the system.
Is there a location that they've selected?
Yes, we have selected a site just north of our current jail. There's a big parking lot, really a crummy parking lot that the unified government already owns. It's not supposed to be gravel, but it is mostly gravel. So we're going to turn that parking lot into our new juvenile facility and wraparound services.
And is there a date that this will start?
Well, it's been approved. It was approved last year. It's going to be our big county initiative. It's going to be the largest county initiative that we've done in a long time, because it'll serve Bonner Springs and Edwardsville as well. But it's slated for design. We're in design right now. We've got the right team working on the design. We've got our all of our community corrections people, our new district attorney, Mr. Dupree. We've got our Sheriff Ash, all the right people working on the design to make sure. We have an opportunity to build a new facility. It needs to be cutting edge in terms of the services it provides.
The jail study, it was done both in regard to juvenile as well as the adults.
That's right.
Look at inmate care, like medical care and other issues relating to inmates?
What it mostly looked at is inmates is capacity issues and best practices. So our jail was built at a time when it was all single cell. There is a movement to do more bunking, double bunking in areas. And there are some areas in a lot of minimum security facilities where it's more of a dorm style living. You know, you have folks who are nonviolent offenders who are spending a few nights in jail and don't need, you know, the as acute a care. So the biggest thing it addresses for us is we've been farming out people to other communities for millions of dollars a year for too long. And by getting the juveniles out in a good facility for them that's going to help them, it's going to allow us to bring all of our farm outs back, which is really more humane for the people in custody. It's more humane for their families in terms of visitation. And it's easier because the transportation costs that we incur by driving to these other communities to transport them and secure transport's a big deal. So the jail study really is a good portion of this juvenile facility will be funded by savings from this farm out.
As far as the police department and recommendations on that, was it more just in terms of efficiencies that they looked at, or are they looking at also the training and qualification of hiring police officers and issues relating to police services in the community?
Well, we've taken a couple different tracks on this. One of the things I did when I first came in, unrelated to these three studies, is I brought in the Department of Justice to evaluate the recruitment, hiring, and promotion of minorities and women in our police, fire, and sheriff's departments, and started this process of bringing in I named a 40-person panel of community leaders and folks in the UG and in public safety to talk through what kind of issues we were having to make sure that we had a level of diversity that reflected our community. Started that initiative actually 9 months before Ferguson. And initially people were saying, well, why is this important that we have this diversity? I think Ferguson answered all of those questions. Mm-hmm. And so that initiative actually bore a lot of fruit. That group worked for 18 months, came back with 30 recommendations. And those 30 recommendations were brought to the commission, and the commission voted 8-1, only one commissioner voted against it. So voted to change how we do recruiting, because I believe we recruit local, we're going to have the level of diversity we expect in our community, how we handle hiring, and then how we handle promotions. So really, those recommendations are all being implemented right now. That's one track. The other track is we got high marks on our study for community policing, and we've been doing community policing in Kansas City, Kansas for 20 years, which is remarkable. And it's borne a lot of fruit for us in terms of relationships with the police and the community. I also work with the clergy in the community. I have a mayor's roundtable for clergy, which is open to any clergy pastoring in Wyandotte County. And that meets about quarterly. And that group, after the uptick in violence last year, and of course we tragically lost two police officers, Detective Lancaster and Captain Melton, last summer, really said we need to get out in the community and start doing some community forums about how we can improve that. And the chief of police, Chief Ziegler, has been great. But we provided officers. We did 15 different community forums to talk about community police relations, 10 of them in our schools. So all 8 high schools in Kansas City, Kansas, and the community college and Donnelly College. And we had over 850 people come together in small groups, groups of 12 to 15 with two police officers, and talking about how we can improve community relations. So from the hiring perspective to the community relations perspective to the efficiency perspective, just in terms of how we do community policing. The study also gave us great data. We instituted a new CAD program, computer-aided dispatch, in our 911 system that will help us better track all of our public safety calls, to give us big data to understand where we need the resources, what times of day we need the resources, because there's analysis that can go on reflectively, but a lot of policing is moving to even anticipatory analysis of where, based on history, where we think problem spots might crop up in the future. So the police department's been on the cutting edge of that kind of data already, and our new computer-aided dispatch is going to help us further with our efficiencies and our allocation of resources.
And those programs you mentioned, the recommendations, largely go to hopefully minimizing conflict between police and the communities and reducing the likelihood of violent situations, outcomes, any claims of excessive force, et cetera.
Right.
But in every city, eventually it is going to occur time to time. So if there is a situation where an officer is out of line and using excessive force, is it just the chief that reviews it in internal affairs, or is there a citizen review board?
Well, there's obviously if a complaint is filed, it goes to our internal affairs that reviews it, that goes to our district attorney's office to look if charges need to be filed. We have had police officers removed from the force for excessive force in the last couple of years. We have 360 police officers who are great individuals in our community. I would bet every organization at every level has a handful of knuckleheads, that make poor decisions. We've been very fortunate in KCK. We have a great department. And we have had people that have left the department for not doing the right thing. But having that I think is really where the credibility of a department comes. It's when there's a cover-up, or there's a, someone's not held accountable, or there's not adequate review, that folks make bad decisions, but they get to stay in their positions, or there's no consequences for that. Sometimes people make bad decisions and they simply need to be trained and encouraged, and that can be done and remain on the department and just be a better officer. But there's going to be some that just need to find a new career and do something different. But we've done a good job in Kansas City, Kansas, I feel like, of doing accountability. Mm-hmm. And we have great men and women on the streets every single day making good decisions. The other piece in training that's been very important, both nationally and locally, is crisis intervention training. And that's the helping officers identify mental health issues. This training is really across the nation now, but we started it about 5 years ago, and our goal is to train every single police officer and sheriff's deputy. And we've been working in partnership with, we've trained all the officers in the Kansas City, Kansas public schools. The KU Police Department, Bonner and Edwardsville have all participated in this program. So when police officers encounter someone with a mental health issue, one, they might be able to recognize it and be able to deal differently with it so we don't end up in a violent confrontation. The other is if when you have a lot of these cases, you know, you have someone with a repeat calls for service on 911, that can actually be coded into our CAD system so the dispatcher can identify it as a mental health call. And now we have a 24-hour crisis center. So instead of just before, if you had to take someone into custody for mental health, the only option was to take them to jail. Now we can take them to a 24-hour crisis center where they can receive treatment, get reconnected with their meds, reconnected with family and caseworkers, and help them get back on the path to stability. That's been a big change in our community the last 5 years and really in the ethos of our department of recognizing that the vast majority of people police officers encounter day-to-day are just folks trying to get through the day, some making bad decisions. And then, of course, our police officers put their lives on the line because we have very hardened criminals who are doing bad things. And we need to make sure we protect our police officers.
24-hour crisis center, is that operated by Wyandotte Mental Health Center?
It is. Yes, it is. It's operated by Wyandotte Mental Health. It's a partnership with the state of Kansas. And we operate it in conjunction with both Wyandotte and Johnson counties. So it's a great partnership.
For those of you who just joined us, you've been listening to Jaws of Justice, and we've been talking to Mayor Holland. And I want to thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
Next on our broadcast, we're going to highlight audio from the rally held August 13th, sponsored by Moore Squared and the local chapters of the Southern Christian Leadership Council and the NAACP. To express a lack of trust in the reports of police killings of citizens by the KCMO Police Department and calling for more citizen engagement. The first speaker we will hear from is Rabbi Doug Alpert. He will be followed by Dr. Vernon Howard of the SCLC and Katie Clower, a high school student at the Hyman Brand Hebrew Academy, who with other students have formed a social justice coalition called Each of Us KC. Other speakers at the rally were Representative Brandon Ellington and local NAACP chapter president, Reverend Rodney Williams. Here are some of those speeches.
Good evening, everybody. I'm glad everybody came out. So this was originally when we envisioned what was going to happen today. We wanted to talk about the three black lives that are lost in police-involved shootings in the past week, and we will talk about that, because, you know, they keep piling on us, and we can't get through one issue before they challenge us with something else.
That's right.
So, but before I talk about that, I'm going to talk a little bit about Charlottesville, and actually, I think the two are connected, and I'll tell you why in a little bit. And I am thinking about the three folks who lost their lives in Charlottesville, Heather Heyer, and State Troopers Jay Colin and Berkey Bates. And I'm thinking about our leaders who did lead and our leaders who did not lead, who through their silence, through their allusion to the many sides, are complicit in what happened in the violence and the hatred inflicted by neo-Nazis, by the KKK, by white supremacists. And they'll call that, they'll refer to that as dog whistles, like it's something subtle. I say to that, dog whistles my ass. It's a full-throated, torch-carrying, hood-wearing Nazi salute. And we're going to fight it tooth and nail. Let me say up front, I fully support and believe in what has come to be known as Black Lives Matter. And what is clear to me is that there's got to be a better way for police to police and police to connect to our community and for our community to have a voice in their safety and in their protection. That there needs to be a new way to train police. And actually, as recently as a couple of days ago on the news, They talked about police executives and the research they showed and what their training should entail. And the leading element is the sanctity of human life.
Yeah.
And if police actually led with the thought of the sanctity of human life, we'd get a much different result than we're getting right now. So we need a different form of training. And when there are police-involved shootings and racial profiling, we need a transparent procedure to investigate those incidents so the community can have full faith that all of the truth is coming out. And I actually believe, and I do believe this, if we have a transparent and just procedure to investigate police-involved incidents, that it will not only benefit the community, it'll actually benefit the police too. So I told you I was going to connect Charlottesville to the need for better policing and a better way for police and community to connect. Because what I believe is that the leaders who didn't speak or sign things like SB 43, which allows and encourages discrimination in the state of Missouri, the Donald Trumps, the Eric Greitens of the world, I think they're thrilled when the community and police don't get along. I don't think they're a supporter of either one. Because when we fight each other, it takes the spotlight off them and what they're doing to us, to all of us. So I say, look past that, fight through it, and let's get to a better place. A place where when we have a problem in our community, the police are the first call, not the last call, where we're all working together for our safety through full transparency, through honest and good relationships. Thank you.
I'm Dr. Vernon Howard, president of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference of Greater Kansas City, a nonviolent, direct action social change organization dedicated to peace, justice, and equity for all of humanity. I'm glad to be here to stand with Moore Square and those who are a part of this great gathering. The reason that it is great is threefold. Number one, we are a coalition of people. Black and white, Latino and Native American, Jewish and Catholic and Protestant, poor, middle and rich, east side, west side, north side, south side. We are business owners. We are working people. We are entrepreneurs. We are unemployed. We are students. We are veterans. We are all people from all walks of life, from all places, but standing together to say that anytime a black life is taken by force, by police authority, and anytime any life is taken by police authority, by force, it must be justified. It must be reported with transparency, and when they are wrong, they must be held accountable. Here's the second reason that this assembly is great, not only because of our makeup, but also because of this. Let the days be over when a police officer can shoot a black man, a white man, or any man, and there not be a community of people who rise up and say something about it. The time has come for Kansas City to break the silence. There was a man named Ryan Stokes, who police officer shot in the back, and allegedly saving a hostile situation. I stopped by to tell you that Stokes was before Brown, and we here in Kansas City refuse to be silent when the continual onslaught of black men continues in this community. We will not be silent. Here is the third reason this assembly is great. Because there is a scourge of racism in this country that is being reborn. That is being renewed. That is being refreshed. And this current presidential administration, including this president, has stoked the fires of racism and has emboldened the white nationalist ethic and has given a wink and nod to those who prior times have hidden their racist hate underneath because it was not acceptable. But I stop by to tell you that we are a people who refuse to allow this kind of race and hatred to rule. What they are depending on is that people of goodwill and people of faith would turn on each other. But you need to say with me, we will not comply.
We will not comply.
Look at your neighbor and say, we will not comply.
We will not comply.
We will not comply to racism. We will not comply to hatred. We will not comply to the KKK. We will not comply to a presidential administration that continually rolls us back as a country to hatred and violence and racism. Repeat after me. We will not.
We will not.
We will not.
My name is Katie Clower. I'm 17 and I'm going to be a senior this year at Hyman Brand Hebrew Academy. For the past 3 years, my school has partnered with University Academy to form a social justice coalition called Future Votes KC. This year, we worked with Moore Square to advocate for a fairer system of checking bias and brutality in the police system. Together, we went with Central Patrol Station officers. Rick Smith, our new police chief, was among them. When asked about racism in Kansas City policing, Chief Smith said, "There is no bias in our police department." Well, Chief Smith, I have another question. What would you call it then? Chief Smith, you saw the hands of my African-American friends fly up when you casually questioned if any of us had been pulled over by the police. You should have seen irrefutable reports, including the Missouri Attorney General Executive Summary from 2015 and Urban League's 2015 State of Black KC that prove racial bias exists in police action. We need to hold police accountable. And we cannot wait for the change we need to come from the police chief. We need to bring forth this change now. In the current system, all citizens' complaints against police action are investigated with little to no transparency by police internal affairs and overseen by the governor-appointed board of police commissioners. When making a complaint, citizens are interrogated alone and cannot even be accompanied by a lawyer, a friend, or a family member. My peers and I spent a year working to advocate for a citizen review process of complaints so citizens' complaints can be heard, so they can be treated fairly and fully. In this remodel, the Office of Community Complaints would run independently by civilians, would handle, review, and decide the outcomes of complaints. An audit group would monitor all findings and use them to implement systematic changes in officer training and policing. All instances of bias and misconduct would be reported and transparent to the public. There is racism in this police department.
Yes, there is.
It is imperative that police acknowledge that this racism exists. It is imperative that steps towards justice, such as a citizen review process, are implemented with urgency.
In the last segment of our broadcast, We will play some of the audio from the August 19th KC rally in support of the National Prisoners' Strike and the Millions for Prisoners' Human Rights March on Washington, D.C. We start with the statement of the prisoners themselves when they called a nationwide prison strike last year. Then, rally organizer Keith Brown L. led a march through the Justice District in downtown KCMO, beginning at the building that houses the public defender's offices. The marchers visited another 7 or 8 sites, including the Western District Appeals Court, Jackson County Courthouse, Jackson County Jail, and the KCMO Police Headquarters. They ended the march back at the Ilis Davis Park, where there were speakers and they read the names of those citizens killed by police in our area over the last few years.
A national prison strike started on September 9, 2016, the 45th anniversary of the day prisoners took over Attica Prison in New York. This September will mark the 46th anniversary. The reason why we are here today is because our incarcerated brothers and sisters have called on us for our support. We have answered that call because we reject the lies told by prison authorities at Attica about what really happened there 46 years ago. We reject the lies that are still being told by prison authorities of today about what really happened in prisons all across this country. So we came here today to address the outcries of our brothers and sisters and to answer the needs of the oppressed souls. There has been a demand for decades by prisoners and activists across the country for incarcerated citizens to be afforded human rights. The statement released last year and reissued this year by the striking prisoners reads in part, "This is a protest against prison slavery, a protest against the school-to-prison pipeline, a protest against police terror, a protest against post-release controls. This is truly a cry from behind the walls to every citizen to become aware and to work to change the immorally duly convicted slave clause of the 13th Amendment to the United States Constitution, which has been used to create the most prolific prison industrial complex in human history. My name is Keith Brown-Eal. I'd like to welcome you to the Millions for Prisoners March here in Kansas City, Missouri.
No racist police, no prisoners, no peace. No racist police, no prisoners, no peace.
You know, they'll offer you 15 or 20 years for a crime you didn't commit. And, you know, 15 or 20 years, it is not like you're going to be getting out tomorrow. So, I mean, maybe if it was 1 or 2 years or something like that, you might would possibly consider it, because a lot of times you might stay in jail, in the county jail, up there 1 or 2 years, and they got to give you your jail time. So, if they offer you that kind of time, you might be more inclined, but they want you to stay gone as long as possible because they make money off of keeping people in prison. And the public defender's offices, they're part of this. They try to pretend like they ain't. I mean, you have to realize that somebody is paying the lawyer that's representing you and they'll prosecute you at the same time. How much justice are you going to get out of a situation like that?
That's right. Yeah.
You know, they get the same paycheck the prosecutor gets. You know, and they don't get paid to get people out of situations. It happens sometimes by chance. They get you out of something, but they get paid to make sure you go to prison. So we need to walk and just move on. We got a few more other places we got to go.
I'm sure everybody here tonight has heard everything that you probably want to hear and a whole lot more about this building. You know, it's been under investigation for corruption. You know, they've been raided by the FBI. They've had correction officers escorted out of the building. Women have been raped. People were being savagely beaten up for trying to call attention to medical issues and things of this nature. This is the worst possible example that anybody could ever look to for running a jail. You got mold all on the walls in the cells. The showers are filthy and nasty. The toilets got crud that has been built up on them that looks like it's been there for years. But this is what it's like when you go in this place. This is one of the few places that came to the attention of the people in Washington, and they were able to get some people down here to look into it. I don't know how much they was able to change. But this is going on all over the United States. And I'm going to tell you something that I think a lot of people are not paying any attention to. This jail is ran by black people, Nigerians. And I think that's the reason why they were selected for the raid. Because you got a lot of jails all over Missouri that's ran by white people, and they're doing the same thing, and they haven't raided those people. But I'm not trying to make a case for them, because if they up there and they treating people like that, they deserve to be raided. And I hope some of them go to jail, because they treated us like animals when we were up there. I think this building holds about 500 people. They want to shut it down. They say it's antique, and they need a new building. But they want to build a building that's got even more cells in it to house more people. Now, here's the curious thing about it. If you don't have enough people to staff this building that only holds 500 people, why would you want to build another building that holds even more people, and they want to put it way out there at the Bannister complex where they got nuclear contamination in the soil and make it harder for people to even get there to be able to visit their relatives? They have a difficult enough time trying to get down here to see their relatives. You know, I mean, now, does that make sense to anybody? Because I've been trying to figure it out. It don't make a lot of sense to me.
The name of this place is Hocus Pocus 1315 Locust. Go in here looking for the truth. Now you see it, now you don't. And the next thing you know, you walking out of there in handcuffs and you're on your way to the penitentiary. This is an auxiliary court building. It also has the offices of the Jackson County Prosecutor's Office that handles the criminal cases. You file your court documents here in this office if you have the privilege of being able to walk down here and hand it to the clerk. I remember not too long ago, I had a litigation going, and some of the way they handled a criminal case that was pending against me, and I walked in the prosecutor's office. She said, "But what do you want?" I said, "I just came in here to give you these papers." She said, "Well, you can't just walk in here anytime you want to." I said, "Well, ain't no sign out there saying it." I said, "This is a public office. Why come I can't walk in here?" So she said, "Well, what?" I gave her the papers, and the lady looked at her. She shook her head and said, "No, no, don't take them." So she tried to give them back. I said, "No, I don't want them." So I took, because once you give somebody some papers, they put their hands on them, they touch them. If you drop them in front of their feet, they've been served. She chased me all the way out the hallway. Tell me, "Sir, sir, you come and get your papers. I'm not taking these." I said, "You got them." I said, "I see you. I'm going to drop them out here in the hallway." I said, "Okay." So she dropped them out in the hallway, and I went on. I came back to look a few minutes later, and she had picked them up and took them back in the office. I guess she gave them to a boss or something, because I was going to go right back over there and tell the judge. But they want to serve you with papers all the time. They want to file stuff on you. They don't want you filing things on them and keeping records about what they're doing that's wrong. And, you know, they got to be right all the time. It's just that simple. You know, I don't care where you go, you deal with these people, you deal with those people, you deal with those people over there. When the deal goes down, they're going to be right. We have to do something to change the dynamics of that situation. Right. We got to start making these people understand that you are here to serve us, not to do us the way you want to do us and make us feel like, you know, that we have to serve you, that you have to always be right. We have to start pointing these things out and showing to, you know, they tell you like the whole time I was going to court, my lawyers were telling me, "Mr. Brown, you should keep your mouth closed and you shouldn't." They didn't even want to let you talk in here. I said, "No, man, the law says I got a right to speak on my own behalf." Well, you got a lawyer. I said, "No, I want to plead my own case. I don't want these lawyers that you hire for me to plead my case. If I had allowed them to do that, I wouldn't be standing here talking to you right now, because they had every intention on sending me somewhere, prison or something." So, you know, it's important that you have to speak up when you're being wronged. You have to make your voice heard. That's right. If you get your ass kicked, you speak up anyway. Woo! You know, and try to make them bring some ass to get some ass. Woo! You know, but you got to make these people hear what you need to say.
We have legitimate complaints that need to be addressed. And they're not going to be addressed if they get to do all the talking.
We was in the first stages of trying to organize this march. And by the way, I hope everybody knows they are doing this all over the country. We're not the only ones. People were asking me, they said, why you want to do this on the weekend or down here when go all these buildings and ain't nobody there? Ain't nobody here anyway. When it comes to this, we can come down here on a Monday, a Tuesday, a Wednesday, a Thursday, or whenever. If they got to deal with something that's a problem for us and we need them to fix it and straighten it out, they're not here. You might as well be over there talking to that bronze statue of our former mayor, Alice W. Davis, because he's probably going to pay just as much attention to you as, cause for as I'm concerned, they all bronze statues. They all need to be bronze statues because for all the good they do, they don't seem to be able to comprehend things that other human beings need them to understand. And I don't think anybody here in this audience tonight will probably ever end up actually going to this building, but it's very easy for your name to end up here at this location after you get through dealing with those people over there. When you get through dealing with these people over here in the Jackson County Jail, if you up here in what they call the Eastern District, you know, it don't just have to be Jackson County. It can be anywhere that's in the Eastern District area. This is where your case comes after they get through jacking you around over there in that court. In St. Louis, they got a Eastern District. This is the Western District. And they both actually on the same level. And then once you get your case done in this building, it goes to the Missouri Supreme Court. Very few cases ever make it to the Supreme Court. So if you have a conviction in Jackson County and you don't get your issues resolved by these people in this building here, you're pretty much done, because the Supreme Court only hears a very few cases. They have to have some type of exception. Once you go to trial and you get convicted, that you got a real heavy burden of trying to convince these gentlemen or anybody else that's in the judicial system to overturn your case, because of the way that they have the judicial system set up. It takes 12 people in Missouri to have a unanimous verdict to say that you're guilty. But they got, and that might seem like that's kind of fair, but they got a lot of tricks they use when you go to trial that's designed to make sure that they pretty much know how these people are going to vote. You got certain areas in Kansas City that they pro-law enforcement. Pro-law enforcement means that if a police officer accuses you of committing a crime, we don't care if it's any evidence or any proof that you did it or not. If the prosecutor files charges on you and they think you're guilty, then we're going to side with the prosecutor. We're going to side with the police department, you know, because we don't think they lie on people. They're trained to lie. You know, that politicians tell lies, police officers tell lies. You know, I reached down to tie up my shoe. I get shot because he thought I was reaching for a weapon, or my life was in danger. I'm laying on the ground with my hands up, hollering, don't shoot. And that man posed a threat to me, so I felt like I needed to kill him. Kind of other ridiculous scenarios. But those are just examples of how the people that run the system lies. If you can't trust the people that's supposed to be administering justice to you to be truthful and honest, then you have no justice. And hence we have the cry, no justice, no peace. It used to be the Jackson County Juvenile Justice Center, or parental control. I was here when I was being young, dumb, and stupid. I didn't know all the things. I did some things I probably shouldn't have done. I ended up in this place. All right, now, this is the place where they put you on county house arrest, bracelet around your leg, and it's kind of like being in jail while you're outside of jail. You know, you have to have your permission from your parole officer to go outside of your house. All you do is go to work, come back in. They give you a little time to go to the store and things. And this is really like about to become one of the major apparatuses of incarcerating people, because slowly but surely they begin to realize, man, we can't afford to keep all these people locked up in these jails we got. So yeah, if we got them on the street, we can make more money out of them. You have to have a job. They don't have to feed you. You got to feed yourself and all that type of stuff, but they can still make money off of you. So this is what they're going to be introducing in the not-too-distant future. You know, putting more people on house arrest, and probably the only people that they're going to actually have incarcerated are people that they're going to say are too dangerous to be out in society. Stands right now, everybody that they got locked up, it don't make no difference if it's a traffic ticket or whatever. They think you're too dangerous to be out in society. And they also have all the county court records over here that when your case gets through being processed in the courts and all this, this is where your records go. And they, when I look at this building, it reminds me of a friend of mine, a dear friend of mine named Sharon Snyder. She used to be a clerk over there in the courtroom, one of the courts over there. And it was this guy named Robert Nelson. He kept telling these people, I'm innocent. And I didn't do this. He kept applying for a DNA test. And every time he applied for it, it got denied on the technicality. According to my understanding of the law, and I've read cases that say this, that you don't have to file a pleading in Missouri. It doesn't have to meet certain type of standards or specifications. If you can write a judge a letter, and I've done this. You can write a judge a letter. If the judge can read that letter and understand what you were saying, then he's supposed to take the appropriate action. But this judge, he put this man through all these changes, telling him that his motion for a DNA testing was incorrect. All my friend did, she just told his sister where she could go to get the records. They fired this woman because they called that giving her legal advice. That was her job, to tell people where they had to go to get the records and stuff. But as it turned out, the man got the DNA test because she gave him a motion that was filed by a lawyer, where another guy got a DNA test, and so they couldn't very well say that his motion wasn't drawn up right then, because the same motion that he filed is one they had already previously granted. Anyway, this man gets a DNA test. It comes back, and it shows that he's innocent. He actually didn't commit. He was in jail for rape. They took 26 years away from this man, out of his life, for something that he didn't commit. When they found out that it wasn't his DNA, they wanted to know, whose DNA is it? They checked the database. They found out that the guy who had actually did the rape was in jail on another murder and a rape in another state. And they let the man out of prison. No thank you, no compensation, no nothing. Just, you free now. Go on about your business and be glad you're out on the street. That's what happens and what takes place over here in this building and that building over there. God only knows how many other people we got sitting in prison that are in these situations just like this. I try to make people understand, when you fall into the hands of the system, they don't care whether you are innocent or guilty. If they're going to proceed against you, they make a decision of whether they're going to proceed against you or not. And once they make that decision, they're going to do everything they can to bring you to what they call justice. This is the Kansas City Police Department building. Another address, Hocus Pocus, 1125 Locust. This statue that I'm standing in front of was erected by the people. I don't know about the people, but somebody erected it. It said, as a tribute to the police of this city who gave their lives in the discharge of their duties. When we get back to the park, we got another list. We're going to read to you of some other people that lost their lives unjustly because of the police. You know, they were killed when the police weren't acting in the line of duty, or at least some of them were. This area here in Kansas City and Kansas has a very high fatality rate when it comes to police officers killing innocent, law-abiding citizens. So, since they have this memorial out here, we thought it was appropriate that we would have a memorial for the people who we feel like died in the line of duty. They honor their dead, we honor ours. You know, they're going to, sooner or later, they pretty soon probably be coming down with some laws to try to stop us from doing that, but we're going to do it anyway. Out of all the buildings that I wanted you to see in this downtown area, I wanted you to see this one the most. This is the municipal court building. That's where you go to deal with all your civil matters. But right across the way here, you see that says Communication Center. This is how they communicate. It's appropriate that they have the statue standing out here, because they let you know, I ain't got no rap. I ain't trying to see what you're saying. And I don't even want to hear it. The Communication Center. It's not a coincidence that they put this statue out here. If you got eyes to see,
and ears to hear, you can interpretate the signs and the message that they sending you. So much for the so-called criminal justice system. Let's go back to the park.
I just want to thank you all for coming out today and participating in the march. We know that mass incarceration is a serious problem all over the country, and especially right here in Kansas City, right here in Jackson County, right here in the state of Missouri. We have some of the worst issues. So this is important for us to rally around and get behind. If you don't know me, my name is Justice. I'm an organizer here. I recently took a position with American Civil Liberties Union as a community organizer to do some good work in our city. And I'm really excited about that. The ACLU has brought several cases against the state of Missouri, and particularly the Public Defender's Office, because they have not provided adequate defense for those who have been given over to that department. That is a huge problem. That means that their rights are not being protected. And we definitely need to rally around that. The other issue that ACLU has been fighting for is for imprisoned women. We currently shackle women who are in labor. That is a disgusting practice that we have carried on and continue with. We still shackle pregnant women, and we need to stop it.
So let's just be clear. Slavery did not end in 1865. It is alive and well today, here in Kansas City and across this nation. It is just behind bars so the public doesn't have to see what the state is doing to our fellow citizens. The struggle against the prison industrial complex is not going to be won through electoral means alone. Let's be clear about this. A lot of the dialogue is that you just have to go to the ballot box. I mean, shoot, I'm here, I'm with the Green Party. And it needs to be run through extra electoral struggle in the streets as we are currently organizing here today. So give yourself an applause for that. While the prison systems are growing, profits are higher than they've ever been, wages are lower than they've ever been, and they are killing our people on the streets by the hand of the state. They don't know what's coming. Socialists, anarchists, leftists are uniting together in struggle to say enough is enough. There have been calls that these American heroes, whatever bullshit you want to call them, and the Confederate monuments be laid down. I have a challenge that I want to pose to you. Let's not stop there. Let's remove every symbol of white supremacy in this country, including the prison industrial complex.
Ladies and gentlemen, first of all, I want to express my gratitude for everybody coming out to attend this most important event. But there is one thing we have to ask of you. We've had a lot of meetings like this before where people just come out. Somebody gets up and makes a speech. Everybody goes home and says, okay, well, somebody will take care of that. We need you to help us take care of what we came here for today. We cannot do this by ourselves. We have to have people behind us who are willing to roll up their sleeves and get their hands dirty trying to do the work that needs to be done. Are you committed to that? Because if you're not, you're in the wrong place. We're tired of this nonsense. We can't go to the politicians anymore. We can't go to the police officers anymore. The prison officials, everybody's on the same sheet of music except us. We have to unite, ladies and gentlemen. What a lot of people don't realize is that when you're in prison, you're just a lab rat. They try something out on you. If you go for it, they try it out on everybody else in the prison population. If the whole prison population goes for it, they try it out all over the state. And the next thing you know, they trying it out on you. You know, they're taking away our rights every day. These gentlemen over here with these guns, they ought to be over here with us, you know, because they're not going to get spared either. This country is for the rich and the powerful. It's not for the poor, the oppressed. It's not for the blacks, the Latinos, and the other people. It's for them, not us. Their interpretation of the Constitution is that it don't apply to those people. It wasn't written for those people. We got to make them understand that we are included in the Constitution, and we want the Constitution to be interpreted the way it's supposed to be.
We hope that you have enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about. something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the host and guest of Jaws of Justice Radio, not of KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff, or volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show episodes and podcast on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page. If you have a show idea or you want to help produce the show, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. And you can always listen to us live on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. This is Jeff Humfeld, and our outro music is Better Man from the Playing for Change CD. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesdays, Alternative Radio on Wednesdays, a mix of national and local programming on Thursday, and Between the Lines at 9 a.m. followed by Bioneers at 9:30 a.m. on Fridays. Up next is Dr. Mike's Morning Medicine Show, and at noon, Arts Magazine with Michael Hoag. Stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon and Eco Radio at 6 p.m.